My name's Kaylee Garden, and together with Boyd Peters, I'm your host for today. The screen actually says that Peter Dorion will be presenting today, but unfortunately Peter's actually sick. So I have the pleasure of introducing my newest colleague, Jeff Springer. Jeff's going to speak about what he sees happening in the market, particularly given the credit crunch that's currently playing out, and why fixed interest is as important as ever to include in your portfolio. Jeff is a senior vice president at PIMCO and has 16 years of investment and industry experience. He's recently joined PIMCO as an account manager. Prior to this, Jeff was head of the Los Angeles office of the Common Fund, a US-based manager of managers. Before this, Jeff held account management positions at the Capital Group and Wellington Management. For Wellington, he was actually head of the Sydney account management team for 3.5 years. He has an MBA from the University of Southern California and a BA in economics from the University of Texas, and he's also a CFA. Jeff's presentation, Defensive Asset Risk, A Wolf in Sheep's Clothing, discusses why it is important to continue to include fixed interest in an investor's portfolio as part of their defensive asset allocation and what characteristics an asset class must have to truly make it a defensive asset class. Jeff will also speak about why investors should be wary of including alternative assets such as hedge funds and infrastructure, which are less liquid and have low transparency as part of their defensive asset allocation. In the past couple of years, bonds have produced low single-digit returns, and investors have been lured by the promise of returns above 8% in high-yielding but also high-risk products. Many investors don't understand the inherent risks in the underlying securities in which they are investing to gain these yields. Jeff will discuss a number of examples of what can happen when alternative assets are used as a substitute for defensive assets. Please welcome Jeff Springer.
Thank you, Kaylee. It's a pleasure to be here and have the opportunity to share with you how PIMCO is thinking about investing in the fixed income markets and some of the other thoughts as we go about building a portfolio. Today I am going to speak about defensive assets and, equally important, some other so-called defensive assets which we believe are truly wolves in sheep's clothing. Now, the dictionary says that a defensive asset is able to provide a moderately steady growth of principal with minimal risk. It's considered stable and a relatively safe investment, especially during a declining economy. And that last part is particularly important because in anticipation of a declining economy, other financial assets tend to significantly underperform and lose value. Now, the characteristics of a defensive asset, as you likely suspect, are liquidity, transparency. You're able to understand all the underlying risks within the instrument and security. It has a low volatility. Preservation of capital is key, you know, the initial investment. It has a predictable return stream, and it tends to focus on yield or income. Now, certainly we believe that bonds are a defensive asset. And although bonds, as Kaylee has mentioned, have underperformed in recent periods because of increasing interest rates, there have been periods where bonds have significantly outperformed other asset classes, particularly when interest rates are reaching a peak. And you can see here you have three examples of time periods where bonds have significantly outperformed in the 12-month period following a peak in interest rates. And in the first example, which occurred in 1989 where rates peaked, the global bond markets actually outperformed close to 20%, or provided a return of close to 20%. And more recently, even in absolute terms when yields were low or interest rates were lower and then declined, bonds still returned a very healthy return of 13.23%. Now, as you might surmise, in the 12-month period before the peak of interest rates, bonds tended to do less well. And that's because bonds tend to lose value. The principal of the bond tends to lose value as interest rates rise. But it's not all bad news because bonds, of course, have an income component which pays on either a quarterly or a semi-annual basis and provides income to the bondholder, which then can be reinvested at the higher interest rate. So the combination of the income component, with the possibility of capital appreciation of the bond over time leads to bonds being mean reverting, meaning that they tend to hold their value and, compared to other asset classes, tend very rarely to have a negative return. And I'm going to strain around here to see, but this chart shows that there are three periods. The first period where bonds have had a negative return, a second period where bonds had negative returns, and just a third period where bonds have significantly underperformed their long-term average. But even in this most recent downturn for bond results, which have been really a reflection of increasing interest rates, they still held value and actually had a positive rate of return. Now, compare that to other asset classes like equities. And what you see here is the long-term history of the MSCI World Equity Index. And you can see that for equities, global equities, there have been very long periods, as we all know, where equities have underperformed. And this usually follows a ramp up in the equity indexes, and there's a bubble, and then it pops, and all that liquidity and investor sentiment draws out of the marketplace. Now, another way to illustrate this fact is through this chart, and what we've done is break out equity and fixed income markets, domestic and global, and shown their long-term annualized return. So this is what is considered the average annual return that these asset classes have produced over the long-term history. In the second column, actually the third column there, you can see the standard deviation of that return. And you can see, and the standard deviation is a volatility around that annualized return. You can see that there's a lot of volatility, as you would suspect, around equities, and a lot of volatility even around global property and some Australian property. The third column shows the probability of each asset class producing a negative return in any 12-month period. So when you look at equities, you have global equities, you have an expectation that 30% of the time in any one 12-month period, you're going to have a negative return. But the experience of global bondholders and even Australian bondholders is that there's very little expectation of a negative return in any 12-month period, and often it's in global bonds, it's almost nil. So we have on this chart three data points representing three asset classes. And the question, of course, is which one of these is hedge funds, which, as they're advertised, try to demonstrate that they provide superior investment results on a risk-adjusted basis. So rather than having people scream out, I might just give you the answer, if that's all right. And that's it. And the other two asset classes are global fixed interest and global equity. Now, the key point on this chart, of course, is to see that on an absolute return basis, hedge funds have outperformed. What's interesting is that global fixed interest has done just as well and actually better than global equities over the very long term, and that global fixed interest has performed well with significantly less volatility or risk. So even on a risk-adjusted basis, which is how we view the world and every asset class, we want to make sure that we're getting ample return for the risk we're taking at PIMCO. We see that on a risk-adjusted basis, global fixed interest is actually producing superior investment results than even hedge funds. And you can see that on based on volatility or around the long-term return, that the volatility of hedge funds is almost three times or slightly more than three times that of global fixed interest. Now, that's not to say that there isn't going to be time periods where global bonds and Australian bonds underperform, and we felt that over the last 2 years where we've had a rising interest rate environment. But what we have seen is when there's that type of environment, there tends to be a proliferation of product within the marketplace which is attractive to retail investors and other investors, even institutional investors, who are looking for higher rates of return. And some of these alternative products and programs are marketed, as Kaylee said, giving 8% return and positioned as defensive within the marketplace. And again, it's these alternative asset classes that we view as being wolves in sheep's clothing. And while we believe that alternatives have a place in the portfolio, it's important to understand the risk. And I'm going to go into that in just a moment. But I thought it's best just to throw up a cartoon here to show that it's easily to be fooled. You can be easily fooled. Every one of these presentations has to have a cartoon, I think, in it. So in comparison, what is an alternative asset class compared to a defensive asset class? Now, clearly, alternatives are almost on the opposite side of the spectrum. They're less liquid, less transparent, highly volatile, and as you would expect or hope, you'd get paid for that volatility through higher returns. And the frequency or yield or the income component tends to be uncertain. So, you know, sometimes it comes through if the security is doing less well. Sometimes that income component can quickly dry up. Now, knowing the criteria of what is a defensive asset and what is truly an alternative asset, we're able to separate the sheep from the wolves. And while we're not saying, again, that alternative asset classes aren't good investments at certain points in time, and we're not saying that they don't play a role within your portfolio, what we're saying is it's important to understand what they are, that they're truly not defensive assets, that they're something else, and you have to have a heightened sense of due diligence when you do the work on these instruments before you invest. An example of that would be a mortgage trust. And this slide just illustrates some of the points that we think about when we look at these instruments, and there could be 4 or 5 points even beyond these here. But the point is, again, it's knowing what you're going to invest in, understanding the risks that are involved so that when things go bad, as they will eventually, and every asset class has a struggling period, as the sector unravels or receives a systemic shock from either the economy, capital markets, or regulatory control, you know, the investor isn't bitten and surprised. And some of these markets can be extremely complex. And, you know, we hear about these instruments in the paper. They're all over the place, whether it's hedge funds, private equity. It's really important to understand the instruments that you're investing in. And, for example, hedge funds, you know, again, can play a role in your portfolio, but it's important to understand that they have a lack of transparency, and understanding that and being willing to accept that risk just on face value and investing. And one of the things that, you know, of course, blew up recently was Basis Capital. You know, people went into Basis Capital with the expectation that they're going to get consistent returns and have a defensive portfolio, but not knowing, not having that transparency in what the portfolio actually was exposed to, which was a subprime U.S. market, created an enormous loss of value for all those portfolio investors. So what do these crises tell us as investors? Well, clearly not to confuse liquidity, be allured by return potential, et cetera, and to understand that these type of alternative asset classes or programs are not defensive assets. It's really focusing on, you know, identifying your defensive assets, building a portfolio, and then going into alternative assets and knowing the return profile and risk that you're going to get from them and doing your due diligence on them. So I guess the bottom line here and what I'd like to leave you with is that if you're focusing on defensive assets, look at these criteria and choose bonds as your defensive assets, which will hold up well in terms of preservation for capital and income, and choose alternative assets to supplement your program, understanding those risks. So I thank you for your time and your interest, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.